The seemingly endless presidential campaign usually provides plenty of opportunities for the late-night comics. The past few weeks, though, those shows have been in reruns because of the writer's strike, and the politicians have enjoyed a largely ridicule-free campaign. So today we want to enlist you as our staff of gag writers. What in politics do you think would make a great joke? Our number here in Washington is 800-989-8255. Email us, talk@npr.org. You can also comment on our blog. That's at npr.org/blogofthenation. We begin with Paul Fahre of The Washington Post, who wrote an article about the role of late-night comedians in political humor. He's with us here in Studio 3A. Paul, nice to have you on the program.
Hi, Neil.
And what do we miss when the late-night comics aren't around?
Well, we miss the framing of the debate. We miss the caricature. We miss the satire of the day's news. Now, think about late-night television. It comes on right after the local news and a day-long news cycle. People know the events that have happened. They want to have them put into a certain kind of perspective, a humorous perspective. And they want, I guess, to figure out what to think of or what other people think of the candidates. Is Hillary what I thought I saw on the news? Is Barack Obama what I thought I saw? And that's kind of one of the functions of the late night comics. They kind of reduce it down to those kind of caricatures and stereotypes, which are in fact caricatures and stereotypes, but do give us some information.
Hillary Clinton, for example, as Ice Queen.
That has been the continuing motif all this year and probably dating back into the 90s too, that she's very controlled, she's very robotic. She has been the source of almost as many jokes throughout this year as any of the other Democratic candidates. Now, in part, that's because she's probably has been the best known of the candidates. We've had a long experience of Hillary going back to the early 90s. But nevertheless, she is this kind of target, this unusual target, and there's a number of stereotypes that have stuck to her as a result of Jon Stewart and Jay Leno and David Letterman, et cetera.
But at the same time, people like Hillary Clinton avoid these barbs. They're also denied the opportunity, you pointed out in your piece, of sitting on the couch with Dave or Conan or whoever and looking a little more human.
Yeah, it cuts both ways. There are no jokes about Hillary, but Hillary doesn't get to go on the show and sort of bust the stereotype and also prove to the world that, hey, I've got a good sense of humor. I show up on these shows where you make fun of me, and I prove to you that I can take the joke. And that, in its way, is presidential. We all appreciate that about our candidates, that they have a sense of humor about themselves.
We've even had presidential candidates declare their campaigns, either on late-night TV or morning radio.
Exactly. Well, and, you know, you're talking about an audience of 12, 15 million a night, so you're talking about a very large group of people. They're an adult audience. Presumably they vote. And they are also motivated because, again, they've probably sat through the news. They know about the events of the day. And now they want to see the people they've heard about.
We want to hear from you. What have you heard about in politics lately that you think would make a great joke, that you miss what Jon Stewart or Stephen Colbert would have said about whatever somebody said? Give us a call, 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK. Email us, talk@npr.org. And David is on the line. David calling us from Oklahoma.
Hello.
Hi, you're on the air, David.
Well, the writers missed a gem the last week when Bush was at Annapolis and introduced Ehud Olmert as Elmo. a little bit of on YouTube. You know, it's kind of hard to when the strike is over and say, guess what happened 2 months ago or 3 weeks ago, and once it's gone, you just kind of miss it.
Yeah, once the moment, you have to strike while the iron's hot, Paul.
That's absolutely right. And of course, that fits with the late-night caricature of President Bush, that he's inarticulate. And then when you have actual evidence for it, as it turns out, yes. And, you know, when you have evidence like that, it's golden. They'll make hay out of that for a week.
Mm-hmm. Thanks very much it's a good joke, David. Work on the delivery, okay?
Okay.
Thanks very much.
You bet.
Let's turn now to Bill Schecht. He's a striking comedy writer for The Late Show with David Letterman and finished a tour on the picket line, in fact, and now joins us on the line from his home in New York. Nice to have you on Talk of the Nation, Bill.
Well, it's good to be here, and I've been listening in, and it's a fascinating topic of conversation. Unfortunately, for my purposes, it's kind of frivolous because when we're not writing, we're not thinking about jokes, and all we're thinking about right now is how we can end this strike and get the fair compensation for our work. And so this has kind of been going on ever since the strike began, where people would come up to us on the line, especially the late night guys, because we're the first people affected by a strike, and we're the only writers that will not recoup what we lose in a strike like this, which is now in its fifth week. And ever since we've been on the line, people have come up to us and said, could you tell us the jokes that you would have been writing if you hadn't been on strike? And we're not thinking about that, and we don't feel very funny because right now we don't find the situation that we're in very funny.
I suspect a lot of people come up to you and say, gee, we wish the signs were funnier.
Yeah, they do, and, you know, again, as if, our labor situation is for their amusement. And it's interesting because the strike has not been covered in the mainstream media because the mainstream media is owned by the very people we're striking against.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's a shame. I know that in the same way that political candidates have caricatures and stereotypes built of them by people like myself, people have this stereotype of a writer as being some overpaid, spoiled brat, and as a matter of fact, there's 12,000 members of the Writers Guild of America. You need to make $30,000 in Writers Guild earnings a year to get health care, and every year half our membership goes without health care. And I think that's an issue that's important to everybody, and nobody knows this because the media isn't exactly interested in getting our side of the story out because we're the people they're striking. We're striking against those very people.
I suspect people think also that topical humor or political humor, as it turns out to be topical, is something that people are bubbling over with. To some degree, this is work to make these jokes come out good.
Yeah, and it's one of those things that is it's out of sight, out of mind. I mean, I don't. It's one of those things. Right now, our lives are about this strike and wondering how long we're going to be out of work. And you know, we're at the front lines of the labor movement for all of entertainment, because the actors' contract is up in June, the directors' contract is up in June, and it's all going to be about the new media. And we're on the front lines. And again, the irony is that the late-night writers, really, this isn't our fight for the Internet, but we're out there because we're part of this union. We're the most visible part right now because we're the first shows affected. And, you know, I just am grateful that Dave, my boss, Dave Letterman, and all the late-night guys have stayed off the air, because I'm sure that the producers thought, oh, you know what, a couple of weeks, these guys are so anxious to be in front of a camera. They don't need the writers. They'll come back in 2 weeks, and they didn't, and they've stayed out for a month. They've stayed out for sweeps, November sweeps, which is when advertisers set their ad rates. So this strike has cost the networks millions and millions of dollars a day. And so that's, you know, that's my day now. My day is not thinking about how, you know, what word George Bush may have mangled, or what guy Dick Cheney may have shot accidentally that will come out of the hospital and apologize for being shot accidentally. I don't think about that. I think about all the collateral damage, all the people that might have lost their jobs if my boss hadn't paid for the staff's salaries. I mean, that's all we were thinking about, and that's all we're thinking about now. And you know, we love what we do, and we miss what we do. But this is bigger. This is bigger than words on a page.
We wish you the best of luck, and thanks very much for taking time out of your day to speak with us.
Thank you for letting me come on, because it's rare that the mainstream media has had us on. And just, you know, if you want to see us back on the air, call the network. Call the network and say, settle this. This is silly. This is silly. It's unnecessary. But it's classic labor war, and, you know, it's something that's vanishing from this country. It's sad. And
Bill Schefter,
that's why I don't feel too funny.
Thanks very much for your time again.
Thank you.
Bill Schefter, a striking late-night comedy variety writer and a union rep for The Late Show with David Letterman, fresh off the picket line and speaking to us by phone from his home in New York. Well, Bill Schefter is unable to write gags on the politics of the day. We're asking you to do that for us now. Our guest is Paul Fahrey of The Washington Post, who wrote a piece that said, if an irony falls in a political wilderness, does anybody hear it? What about you? 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK. Email us, talk@npr.org. This from Martin on Trent Lott's retirement after going to church and hearing, for everything there is a season, he added a verse, and there's a season for making money. That, of course, Trent Lott widely expected to be going into the lobbying business on K Street in Washington when that opportunity arrives 1 year from now. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And let's see if we can get some callers on the line. This is Gary. Gary with us from St. Louis.
Yeah, well, just as an example of how much the professionals are needed, this week with Stephanopoulos, normally has her Sunday funnies, and it's several weeks ago, George had put out asking for viewer submissions to put into that the void space, and so far, nothing's come on.
That's interesting. Paul Fahrey, you noted in your story that every once in a while there's something that happens on YouTube or Jib Jab, which is an animated cartoon kind of thing that will go viral and everybody will see it, but it's not quite the same.
It's not the same at all, in fact, and this shows in some ways the limitations of the Internet. We think of it as being everywhere and available all the time, and in fact, it is, but television each night, these late-night shows, 10, 12, 15 million people all at once are seeing the joke. A jib jab, a viral video, what have you, will take weeks to achieve that level of viewership. And in fact, very few, if any, viral videos have ever gotten to the 15 million mark. In 1 hour and a half, all of America can hear the joke that Jay Leno and Dave Letterman and Stephen Colbert are telling.
Thanks very much for the call, Gary.
Thank you.
Let's see if we can go now to Chris. And Chris is calling us from Minnesota.
Hey. Yeah, here's one that explains the gap of knowledge of Bush on the NIE, and it's when he first heard about it from August till now. It seems that it's all Bill Clinton's fault because of that don't ask, don't tell. Bush didn't ask, and McConnell didn't tell.
Okay.
And also, Bill Schaff, solidarity, my brother. I do not watch Letterman anymore at all.
All right. Thanks very much for the call, Chris.
Yep.
Bye-bye. Let's turn now to, this will be Patricia. Patricia with us from Davidson in North Carolina.
Hey, I thought that the late night guys would have had a great time with Bush's statement that Iran was dangerous, Iran is dangerous, and Iran will be dangerous as a simplistic, maybe even first grade practicing of verb tenses and just that hard work would pay off when he was writing his autobiography when he got out of office. So. Yeah.
Now that you put it in terms of going through the verb tenses, yes, I can see there's a joke there.
Yes.
Well, you don't have it, and I don't have it, but there's a joke there somewhere.
Yeah, work on the delivery.
Work on the delivery. Timing. Timing's everything.
You really can't get too partisan with some of these jokes. Let me give you an example that was one that was on Letterman. Maybe Bill Schiff wrote this. He said, former President Bill Clinton says he has been very, very concerned about global warming. In fact, earlier this week, another chunk of ice fell off his wife. Now, you know, that's not a particular policy prescription. It's just a personality attack. And it's a little bit different than, attacking someone's policy about Iran or attacking someone's policy about health care. The late night comics tend to stay in the personality realm and away from advocacy of any kind.
You also noted that if we continue to have this culture, which is ridicule-free, irony-free, we're going to turn into something different.
Well, I said in the story that we'd turn into Canada, and I heard from Canadians, and they didn't particularly like that. There's actually a great tradition of satire in Canada, so let me just say something kind about Canada.
Writes Laurent in Ames, Iowa. Hillary didn't want to be president since she was in kindergarten. She wanted to be Empress of the Universe. Say this for her, though, she was willing to advance there slowly. Kelly, First Lady of Arkansas, First Lady of the United States, President of the United States, working on a joke.
I think
the Letterman staff, once the strike is over, might want to inquire. They're in Ames, Iowa. As you look ahead towards the campaign, though, one of the things that people really miss is those the real parodies, the skits on Saturday Night Live.
Right. Of course, a great tradition on Saturday Night Live has been the political skit. And amazingly, they can do it, 3 days after the event occurs. I remember one classic was their Clarence Thomas Supreme Court hearings, where they had everybody playing the various senators. And that skit, written by Al Franken, who's now running for senator in Minnesota, came on the air within 3 days, I believe, of those hearings. And it was remarkable that they could turn it around so quickly. And they do the campaigns all the time.
Here's Dwayne. Dwayne calling us from Hartsville in South Carolina.
Hi, how are you guys doing today?
Very well, thanks.
Well, I have a Saturday Night Live skit that I would love to see. It's kind of a cheap joke, but it would be Mitt Romney in Bigger Love. And it would have Mitt having a reporter come into his home to do an in-depth interview, and he would introduce his wife, and then different women would keep coming in and out of the set, and they would be his wife's "quote unquote" friends.
I see. Well, I think you're spot on that Romney and Mormonism this week would have been hard to avoid for Saturday Night Live. But thanks for the call.
Thank you.
And Paul Fahrey, thanks for being with us today.
Thank you, Neil.
Paul Fahrey, a staff writer for the Washington Post, who joined us here in Studio 3A. You're listening to Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan, NPR News in Washington.